And we're back here on Essential Music. Well, tonight, composer, arranger, and drummer for the rock band The Police, Stuart Copeland, is going to join forces with the DSO to perform Songs of The Police. It's tonight at 7 p.m. at Orchestra Hall. And it was pretty exciting for me to talk to him. I mean, he might be my favorite drummer. I always thought his drumming felt so melodic to me and powerful and intricate and interesting. So anyway, I said, I definitely want to talk to him. He couldn't have been more gracious. He was quite animated, very interested in what was going on in Detroit. He had a lot of questions about what's going on in the Motor City. It was a joy to talk to him. He held nothing back. His language, as a matter of fact, was quite colorful. I had to edit around that, which is pretty funny. Anyway, you know, The Police, they recorded 5 studio albums from 78 to 83. You know, it kind of feels like they did more, but that was really this really concentrated period of creative time for them. And then they disbanded, and everybody went their separate ways, including Stuart Copeland. He ended up doing a lot of film scores. He wrote a couple of operas. And now he's revisiting his days with The Police by putting a lot of those songs through a classical filter. And he goes from city to city, performing with some of the best orchestras in the country, including the DSO. So I thought I would just start by asking him how he decided which Police songs to include in tonight's program.
Well, the first ones I went to were the ones that I used in the documentary that I made about The Police, where I cut up these Police songs to suit the documentary. Then, having cut them up, you know, taking the verse from this song and putting it with the chorus of that song and just generally lobotomizing it, that's where I went first and orchestrated those. But I still needed more. So then I start to look around. The next thing was the ones that are fun for me to bang on drums. And that's pretty much it. And during the course of all this, I discovered a lot more about the material that I had never really recognized before.
Like what?
Well, the lyrics, for one thing. I never listened to the lyrics. I have no idea what he was yelling about up there. All I could see was the back of his head. And turns out there's some really poignant stuff there.
When you had to listen back to your parts, the drumming parts and the percussion that you provided.
Actually, I didn't. I didn't do that. I should have. And if a Police record comes on the radio and I hear, oh, darn, I should be doing that. That was cool. I just don't. I never play anything the same way twice. The show I play in Detroit will be not what I have played anywhere else. I mean, and to the great consternation of bandmates, drives them nuts. Can you just play it the same way twice so I know where's what?
Do you do that because it's more interesting for you, or that's just not how you work?
Oh, lack of discipline. As a composer, I'm very disciplined. I orchestrate all this stuff. It takes me hours, days, months to put all this on the page, and it takes great mental discipline. And when I play with those orcs, they are very disciplined. They play exactly what's on the page beautifully. And I love that about all those other musicians. Sadly, when I get on the drums, I'm not that disciplined guy. I'm that 800-pound swinging through the trees. I can't help it.
Well, when you had to record with The Police, didn't you have to recreate the same thing over and over while you guys recorded?
No.
Or were you pretty freewheeling even then?
Well, all those Police records, except for the first one, all of them, the drums were recorded about 20 minutes after I heard the song for the first time.
Really?
Sting would reveal his songs on an as-needed basis. And so he pulls out a song. Oh, great, cool. He's showing Andy the chords, and we're all cool, cool. And while he's showing Andy the chords, I'm sort of thinking about the rhythm and what I might do and everything. Okay, let's do a take. And we'd do 2 or 3 takes. And we'd usually end up with take 2. So that would be the second time the first take. The first time we ever ran the song down, such as Murder by Numbers, that's the record. And so those drums are there forever. All the guitars, all the basses, the vocals, they get to redo that over the next month. They're honing and tuning and replaying and layering all of their stuff. The drums that I played 20 minutes after I heard the song for the first time are there in concrete for the rest of eternity. And by the way, I'm happy with that. I would go out on the tour and I'd figure out a better way of getting back down to the verse from the chorus. And this is what I should have done on the record. But you know what? The record kind of works.
For sure. If and when you do hear those performances back, do you think to yourself, wow, that what I did was really good? Like, when you hear yourself, Are you impressed or are you thinking, I would have done that differently?
A couple of things I would have done differently. Message in a bottle. Where was Andy when I needed him? I did one too many overdubs at the end. I added some crash cymbal and, you know, and I listen to it now. Please fade, fade, fade. You know, because Andy was usually the guy to say, cut that out. You know,
really?
But he must have been in the swimming pool that afternoon or something. I don't know. But normally, I've discovered something. You know, one of my operas that I wrote 20 years ago got revived, only they had a bigger orchestra. I wrote it for just a quartet and two singers. But this new company putting it up, they have a bigger orchestra, 12 musicians in the pit. Okay, so I reorchestrated the piece, which meant that I had to pull out this ancient piece that I wrote 20 years previously. And that's exactly what I would have written today. And I realized that the only thing that's changed is the skills. The actual musical identity was there from birth. And so although I've become a better musician in terms of skills and learning stuff, it's the same guy.
I watched some of the videos of these performances that you're doing, and it occurred to me when I saw you up there conducting, number one, and then when I saw you up there playing guitar, number two, I thought, how liberating for a drummer to be able to be walking around and running around and doing whatever he wants.
Oh, yeah. And looking back over at the drum set, some poor is working his ass off over there. Well, I get to take my ease at the front of the stage. I mean, it is fun to stand in front of a big orchestra and lead them through a piece and feel the power and join with them. And one of the most important things that I do when I arrive in a city, because, you know, I'll be playing with the Detroit Symphony for about 2.5 hours. I'll meet them that afternoon at 2 o'clock. How you doing? How you doing? They will nail it. And we open, you know, doors at 7 and we'll play the show that night. That's how slick these players are. And to get a little extra something, I go and hang with them. I'm over there with the brass section talking to them about their mutes. My favorite is to go over to the woodwinds and in a loud voice ask the oboist, tell me about your reeds. And all the other, you know, the clarinets, the saxes, they all go, no, don't ask them about their, you know. And I mean, we're bonding. So that when we play the songs, there's a very different feeling. They're leaning forward. They're into the experience. And for the show, they're totally why we're here tonight is for this big, bad symphony orchestra. I got a rock band on stage, too, but we're here tonight for this huge orchestra.
What is it like to hear those songs in that context?
Like I say, I have more appreciation for those songs now than I did when I was at the back of the stage playing, you know, like Fury, because the orchestra is so much quieter, it's more powerful. Weirdly, an acoustic phenomenon is that the orchestra, when you see an orchestra play, it feels really huge and powerful and deep and sonorous and rich. But actually, the volume is about a quarter of two guys with a drum set and an AC-30. Just you put my hit my snare drum like a rock band once, and you lose the next four bars of orchestra. The difference in volume is profound. The sensation is the same of the power and the majesty, but it's so much. So I have to have a completely different technique for playing with orchestra, which is really quiet. The vocabulary is wider and the dynamics are more powerful too. When we do let rip, it's a bigger hit and more of a jolt. So hearing in that very sophisticated, rich environment, and also I have to mention the three soul sisters on the mic, Ashley, Carmel, and Amy. I never paid that much attention to R&B when I was growing up. I was all about Jimi Hendrix and aggressive rock music and everything. But man, working with, and I made a choice, kind of an intellectual choice to have, let's have three women. But man, when I actually heard them, I did all the arrangements. But when I actually heard them, it's like the Police song sung by the Supremes. That lights me right up. And I'm now a huge fan of the Ronettes, the Chiffons. I've become a fan of a whole new kind of music. But those women singing these songs, that's something else. With a big bad orchestra and me banging stuff, it's a pretty cool show.
You're going to all these different cities and playing with musicians you never played with before. Is that nerve-wracking in any way, or is there an excitement as to, boy, I wonder how this is going to go?
It always amazes me how well it goes. And the first run-through is exponentially not as good, shall we say, as the second time they play it. They pick it up so fast because their whole ethos is to obey the page, which makes them beloved of composers and orchestrators. Their mission is, if I, playing my bassoon, play exactly what it says on the page, every nuance, every hairpin, every, you know, accent, every, you know, everything, then that piccolo player 20 feet away, who is also obeying her page, together, if we both obey the page, we are the mighty Detroit Symphony. And that's where their sense of self-worth comes from, this corporate identity as a mighty orchestra. And they achieve that result by obeying the page and swinging together. For me, doing what I do, I know exactly where they are. Poor old Stingo never knew where I was going to be, and he had to do his thing with World War III over his left shoulder. In these shows, the orchestra is exactly where I know they will be, and so I can take a left, I can take a right, I can. I'll meet you in 16 bars because I know where they're going to be in 16 bars. And so for me, it's very liberating, the fact that they are so dedicated. Their life's mission is to reproduce exactly what's on the page.
That's drummer percussionist Stuart Copeland, who's performing tonight at 7 p.m. with the DSO. You can find out more by visiting dso.org. Let's get to another Police song that's been on his set list for this performance. I assume he's going to do it tonight. This is from the Police album Outlandish Amour. It's Can't Stand Losing You. Here's the Police. That's the Police. Drummer Stuart Copeland joins the DSO tonight to perform songs of the Police. For more info, go to dso.org. We'll get back to Essential Music right after this.